What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Tropp, and I'm your host, Katie Tropp. Well, here we are in sports fan purgatory. You know, that time of year when football season has officially ended, baseball hasn't started, we're at the NBA All-Star break, so literally not a goddamn thing is going on sports-wise, except for college basketball, but that's, you know, that's just not as exciting as everything else. So usually what I do this time of year is I just throw out a bunch of topics on each sport and just start talking about them because not a lot is going on right now at this current point in time. So let's go ahead and start off with some NBA topics. Basically, I'm picking five topics from each sport. There's no order, really. They're all just random topics I decided to select and discuss because it is that unfortunate time of year where ain't shit going on in the sports world. So let's begin with the NBA, since we are now officially at the second half of the season. Since the NBA All-Star break is this weekend, that usually signifies it's the second half of the season. And things can absolutely turn around. There are some teams, you know, who may be kind of just on the outskirts of the playoffs, who could all of a sudden make a big old run and all of a sudden be in the playoffs, or a team that's actually playing really well right now and could just fade away, or some type of injuries. We've already had the trade deadline. We had a crazy trade deadline with a whole bunch of different moves, but let's go ahead and begin with the number one second half storyline of the NBA, of course, is what's going to happen with Luka Doncic as a Laker. Now, I am a Lakers fan, so I, of course, am super excited about this. I cannot wait to see what happens here. I've already been excited with his first couple of games he's played in, and I just think it's great that we have a future beyond LeBron James, because that's always been my issue here the last couple of seasons, is who's going to be after LeBron when he retires, because he's obviously going to be retiring within the next couple of years. But him and Luka, I kind of feel like, is going to be a fantastic duo. I mean, LeBron is actually still playing great basketball. He's playing at a high level. I mean, he's dropping 42 points on some occasions here. He's still averaging. He's still dropping triple doubles. He's still having double doubles. And I really actually think he and Luka are going to complement each other well. A lot of people were kind of concerned that the both of them are ball hogs, but LeBron has been trying to pass the torch to AD for many years, and AD just never really took it. Whereas I feel like Luka is going to have no issues taking the torch from LeBron, and I think LeBron's going to have no issues passing the torch to him as well. As a matter of fact, I think LeBron prefers to be a passer and a delegator of the ball rather than being the guy who has the burden on his shoulders every time, whereas it needs to be Luka now, and I think that's a great transition here, but I also think they're going to be a good duo together. And not just them, you know, Reeves is having a good year. Dalton Connect, he's been a pretty solid rookie for us as well. And even without LeBron, I mean, we played pretty well in a game about a week ago without him or Luka on the court. So I'm actually looking forward to the second half of the season for the Lakers, not just because Luka's there, but the Lakers were already playing pretty decent basketball before he got there. And I just kind of feel like he and LeBron are actually going to fit together pretty well. And who knows? I don't think they're championship level just yet. But you never know, because like I said, the second half of the NBA season, sometimes the tide can completely turn. And these are two game-changing players playing together. Like I said, I still kind of expect it to be more like of a next year thing where they make a championship run, but would not be shocked if they did something in the postseason this year. But I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what Luka has as a Laker, not only this year, but in years to come. Second topic I have for the second half of the NBA, who is going to dominate the Eastern Conference? Is it going to be the Cleveland Cavaliers, who have pretty much dominated the Eastern Conference from start to finish so far, or start to second half so far, or the Boston Celtics? You know, they are the defending champs, and they actually started off the season as the most dominating team, but have really started to kind of slide off just a bit. Nothing concerning, of course. Because the thing about the Eastern Conference, not nearly as stacked as the Western Conference. So even if the Celtics can't catch up to the Cavaliers, who cares? They're still obviously going to make the playoffs. But Cleveland, are they going to continue this run? Because we don't know. I mean, they've played fantastic this first half of the season, and I feel like they definitely are for real. I think they're a legit competition for the championship this year, just because they've definitely stepped it up on the defensive side of the ball. The offensive side of the ball was never an issue for them. It was always the defense. And this year they just seem to be getting better and stronger as the season wears on. So are they going to keep it up? Are they going to be able to maintain this number one status and actually take over the Eastern Conference? Or is Boston, because, you know, Boston hasn't fallen off. When I say they have a lull at certain points in the season, it's just like, wow, they had like a couple of bad games. But for the most part, they still are one of the best teams in the league, and they still are the defending champs, so you can't count them out. But I wouldn't be shocked if at the end of the season, they are the number one overall seed as opposed to the Cleveland Cavaliers. But I do think the Cavaliers right now are the better team. Then you also got to take a look at the Eastern Conference at the New York Knicks. Are they legitimate? Now, they've been playing great basketball themselves, and they play great on the defensive side of the ball, and Karl Anthony Towns has just fit right in with this team. But are they a legit contender? They've looked like it at times, but then there's been these times where they've just got their ass beat and you're like, what the hell happened here? So are they going to be the team that actually kind of gets above these two? I doubt it. I'm actually leaning towards Cleveland because they've been more consistent than basically every team this season other than the Oklahoma City Thunder. But in the Eastern Conference, though, that's what we're talking about. I just believe the Cavaliers, they've played so well this season. I don't really see them losing their grip, but I would not be shocked if the Boston Celtics make a nice run here in the second half and overtake the Cavaliers as the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Then the third storyline I have for the second half of the NBA is the Houston Rockets, or are the Houston Rockets for real? And, you know, I've had my questions about them all season. Are they legit? They've played great basketball against some good teams, but heading here into the All-Star break, they actually are not playing as well as they started off the season, which is cause for concern because you don't want to head into the All-Star break slumping because usually that you come right out and you start to slump again. So are they going to be able to maintain their lead? Are they going to be a legit contender? I mean, in the paint, they are one of the best teams in basketball in the paint. They really can't be fucked with. They have been dominating the paint all season long. They've been the number one rebounding team all season long, and that's really just their bread and butter. And then it's a bunch of young guys who have been stepping it up throughout the season. So are they going to be able to keep this up, or are they just there? They're going to play some good games, but then once we hit the playoffs, are they going to be a play-in team? Are they going to lose their grip? Because they've actually had their division lead for the majority of the season, and they're in a pretty solid division too. So are they going to be able to maintain that? We'll see. Like I said, coming into the NBA All-Star break, they haven't been playing as well as they started off the season, but who knows? It could just be that that couple of weeks where you just slump for a bit. But I don't know about Houston. I still, you know, I had my beliefs in them a couple of weeks ago, but then they started to slump, and it's like, they're not playing that well. And there tends to be that team that heads into the All-Star break and just tumbles down and just keeps tumbling as the rest of the season wears on. And my fourth topic for the NBA second half storylines is, will the Oklahoma City Thunder finally win a championship? They are easily the best team in the league. They're dominating offensively. They're dominating defensively. SGA is obviously having an MVP season. He has got to be the leader of the pack for that, at least right now. But also, they've been able to battle through the injuries and still keep on winning. They are beating the good teams, the bad teams. They're blowing out teams. They're winning the close ones. They just are winning in so many ways, shapes, and forms that, to me, they're obviously the front runner for the championship. But they're also they just got Chet Holmgren back a week or two ago. So what's that going to look like? I mean, they already were dominating the paint, and now he comes back, and he's a young gun, and we'll see what happens here. But he's definitely going to provide them some more offense, but he's definitely going to provide them some more help in the paint. And if they just keep cruising along the way they're cruising along, I think it's going to be very difficult for any team to beat them as the season continues on because they just really are playing well in every way, shape, and form that you can in basketball, and it's going to be interesting to see if they're actually able to keep it going because these last couple of seasons, they have had great regular seasons, but then fallen apart in the playoffs, so is that going to happen? But so far, I don't think there's really any questions with the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think they are easily the best team in the league. just because they dominate in every way that you possibly can. And then my last topic for the NBA second half storylines are two teams. I'm going to pick one team in each conference who I think are going to make surprise playoff runs, meaning I just think they're going to at least make the playoffs, whether they make the play-in tournament and then just kind of make a little run. I'm not expecting these teams to win a championship by no means. I just kind of feel like they're going to be teams that we definitely see in the postseason. So in the Eastern Conference, I'm going with the Detroit Pistons. They went from the worst team in the league last year, not only the worst team, but one of the most embarrassing teams in NBA history, to now actually being a team that's right now, they're actually if the playoffs were starting today, they would be the sixth seed. So they're not even, they would be a shoe-in for the playoffs, not even a play-in tournament team. Like, they would actually be a playoff team, which is just crazy to think because, I mean, they don't really have any standout players other than Cade Cunningham, who's been having a fantastic year. But, I mean, outside of him, everybody else is pretty much a role player. A lot of young guys, they are a very young, scrappy team like the Houston Rockets. But they're just playing good basketball. They're in the Eastern Conference, so it's a little bit more easy for a decent team to make the playoffs. Now, I definitely don't think they're a championship-level team by no means, but it is crazy to see that they go from literally one of the most embarrassing franchises in history, because the Pistons, they haven't been good in years, but they've been bottom of the barrel terrible for about 4 or 5 seasons now, and now this year they actually are in line for the playoffs. And not only do I think they're going to make the playoffs, but I think they're going to actually legitimately make the playoffs, not be a play-in team, but legitimately make the playoffs if they keep playing this way. And then my Western Conference surprise playoff team is going to be the Minnesota Timberwolves. They haven't had that great of a first half. It's been very up and down. They really haven't looked good since they traded Karl Anthony Towns. They have been starting to get it going just a bit, but Rudy Gobert has really fallen back this season. His defense is just awful, but Anthony Edwards, he's been as good as he always is, but he's about it. But they do seem to be finally playing some team basketball and you know, playing a little bit better than they started out as a season. I think they're a little bit more cohesive as a team, and they are battling through some injuries as well, so they should be getting some guys back here as the season wears on. But I definitely don't consider them to be a championship-level team, but I do think they're going to be a team that actually makes things interesting once we head towards the end of the season and once we hit the playoffs. And now let's move on to baseball, because pitchers and catchers have been reporting all week. So officially the start of baseball season for the most part. I mean, spring training, we still have about a month away from that. But the pitchers and catchers have reported, so we are pretty much officially there. So now I'm going to talk about 5 upcoming season storylines for baseball, beginning with: will the Mets' spending spree pay off? Because, of course, you know, the Mets have actually been spending a lot of money over the last couple of years. They are actually the highest spending team in the league over the last couple of years, even over the Dodgers, which is shocking because it kind of feels like the Dodgers get every great player that's out there. But it's actually the Mets who have been spending the most money, and it has not paid off for them at all recently. But they did end up signing Juan Soto in the offseason, signing him to the biggest signing contract of all time. And he deserves it. He's a fantastic player. He's already won a World Series, and he is a game-changing player with every team he has ever been on. So he definitely should provide them some offense. They did end up re-signing Pete Alonso in the offseason, so they still have him. They still have Francisco Lindor. They re-signed Manaea in the offseason, who had a fantastic year for them last year. They picked up Clay Holmes, the relief pitcher from the Yankees, in the offseason. So they did make some big plays, some big moves. But is it going to be enough to finally get them not only into the World Series, but actually winning the World Series? They're definitely going to have no issues on the offensive side of the ball. But I do still have questions about their pitching. I mean, Manaea, was his season last year just like one of those off seasons where he just randomly just has a fantastic year, and then this next year he's going to get injured? You never know what's going to happen when you pay pitchers, but I feel like they're definitely going to be one of the top offensive teams. But they haven't been consistent. So with the Mets, I can't really believe in them until they actually do something. They're kind of like the Knicks or the Jets as well. You know, those New York teams, sometimes they just never show up. But Juan Soto's definitely going to put some butts in the seats. And he's definitely going to provide them with a huge source of offense. That's for sure. Then the second topic heading into the MLB season, will Shohei Ohtani finally pitch this season? Because, you know, he had to take last season off from pitching due to another Tommy John surgery. Obviously, he had no issues hitting, so that's not going to be an issue. As a matter of fact, the annoying thing with the Dodgers is not only did they win the World Series last year, but they got even better in the offseason this year. Because my whole thing with them last year was their starting pitching. I didn't think their starting pitching was that good. Well, now this year, their starting pitching is going to be fan-fucking-tastic, because not only do they have the potential that Shohei is going to be pitching, because it looks like he is going to pitch. It looks like he's definitely going to be pitching at least by May. It looks like, but who knows? There is no actual starting timeline for him to begin pitching. But if he is what he is, not only is he going to be killing it in the lineup, but then he's going to be a great starting pitcher. And then they also picked up the hot starting pitcher in the offseason, Sasaki. He out of, I believe, Japan. I believe he's out of Japan. And they picked him up in the offseason. He was the hot free agent, so they got him. And then they also picked up Blake Snell, a free agent as well. He is a two-time Cy Young Award winner. He was with the Giants last year, and he started out the season injured, but actually ended the season pretty well. So not only does it look like they're going to get Shohei back as a starting pitcher, but they already picked up two really solid guys. Looks like they're going to re-sign Kershaw as well. So not only are they going to be hot offensively, but it looks like the Dodgers took care of their big weakness last year, which was the starting pitching. And that's crazy to say that the World Series champs had a weakness, because they did, but it didn't matter because they still won. I'm pretty sure we're going to see Shohei pitching again this year. And if he is anything like he was pre-injury, the Dodgers are going to be pretty goddamn good again this year. Then the third topic I have heading into the 2025 baseball season. The Yankees lost Juan Soto, but with that being said, they gained a few guys by not spending money on one guy, but they actually are now spending money on a few other guys that they picked up in the offseason. One being starting pitcher Max Fried, who's played very well for his time with the Atlanta Braves. He did have to deal with some injuries, but I mean, at this point, that's pretty much kind of par for the course for a lot of baseball players these days. But to me, the Yankees' biggest issue last year was their starting pitching, even though it was pretty solid for the most part. It did fall apart during the second half of the year, and it definitely fell apart during the playoffs as well, and obviously their World Series run fell short due to that as well. So Fried's definitely going to bolster their starting pitching. But they also added Cody Bellinger, and I don't think a lot of people, you know, obviously he's not Juan Soto, but Bellinger is a great source of offense. He has been a fantastic player. He's an ex-MVP, for Christ's sake. I mean, the dude, he has no issues driving in the runs. It's really just injuries are his issue. And then they also picked up Paul Goldschmidt. I know a lot of people aren't looking at this one as a big deal, but Goldschmidt's actually been one of the most consistent dudes throughout his entire career. He's coming off of a, you know, kind of injury-plagued down year that he had last year, but I still think Goldschmidt's definitely a guy who could provide a source of offense for them. I definitely don't think he's going to be the game changer he used to be, but I definitely think he's going to help them out at the first base position, which is definitely what they need since they lost Rizzo. And I mean, they weren't really that great at first base last year anyway. So I think he's definitely going to add defensively. He's definitely going to add some help there as well. Then the fourth topic I have for the upcoming baseball season is who I think is going to be a surprise American League team. A team that didn't really do anything last year, or kind of made a little bit of a run towards the end of the season last year, but I think could potentially be at least a playoff team. I don't know if they're going to be a World Series champion, but definitely be a team that is probably a team we discuss all season long. So on the American League side, I'm going with the Boston Red Sox because they made some big moves this offseason, beginning with they traded for starting pitcher Garrett Crochet a couple months ago. And, you know, he's one of the top pitchers in the league. He's had the last couple of seasons where he has just been lights out for a terrible Chicago White Sox team, especially last year. They were terrible, but he was actually a Cy Young level pitcher. So they're definitely getting one of the best pitchers in the league. Then they also just this week picked up Bregman. You know, he's been having a free agency frenzy where a few teams were vying for his interest, and the Red Sox ended up being the winner. And I kind of feel like, you know, he's definitely at the tail end of his career, but he still has a lot of baseball left in him, and he's definitely one of the most consistent guys offensively and defensively. So I think they're getting a great player there. So I think just with the moves that the Red Sox have made this offseason, they actually did start to make a nice little run towards the end of the season last year as well. So I look at the Red Sox as being an American League surprise team. And then my National League surprise team I have as the Chicago Cubs. You know, they've been a team that's not really done a whole lot these last couple of seasons, but they've also made a couple of offseason moves. They bolstered their bullpen and their starting pitching with a few pickups in the offseason. But to me, their biggest pickup was Kyle Tucker from the Houston Astros. You know, he's been giving them a lot of offense over the last, like, five seasons. And I definitely think he's going to make the Cubs. You know, I don't think the Cubs are going to be a World Series level team, but I definitely think they're going to be a competitive team, especially with some of these moves they made. And I think the Kyle Tucker move is the best move that they could have made for a guy who's definitely going to provide them a lot of offense, but he's great defensively as well. And I think he's going to, in Wrigley Field, I think it's going to be a perfect ballpark for him offensively. All right, heading into the NFL offseason and some NFL offseason storylines. And we're going to have quite a few storylines coming up in this offseason, beginning with defensive end Myles Garrett. Now, he, of course, is with the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, he's a defensive player of the year. He's been one of the most consistent and best defensive ends that the NFL has had since his rookie year. And it seems like he's sick and tired of losing in Cleveland and would like to move on. He did ask for a trade a couple of weeks ago. Who knows if it's actually going to happen, because you can request a trade all you want, but it doesn't mean that they're going to oblige. But it's going to be interesting to see, because whether he stays or not, he's definitely going to be somebody a lot of teams are going after. And some of the teams he's potentially linked to, he could be a complete game wrecker or game changer. You know, I've heard a team like the Packers might be interested in him. Well, they already have a pretty solid defense. I feel like the one thing they're missing is an extreme pass rusher like Myles Garrett. He could completely change the trajectory of a team like that. But you never know what's going to happen here. It's obviously that the offseason just began and free agency has not begun, and he's still with the Browns. The Browns have to want to get rid of him, and the Browns front office has actually said they have no interest in trading him away, but that doesn't mean anything. That could just be them saying, we don't want it. And it could also just be Myles Garrett saying he wants more money, but he also has come out and said, no, that's not the case. I actually want to win. And I do actually believe that, because, I mean, he's played with the Browns since his rookie year, and he's only had a couple of seasons where he's had playoff potential, and it probably sucks losing all the time. And when you have Deshaun Watson, I mean, they're tied to him for probably another couple of years. So chances are the Browns aren't going to be competitive for another couple of years. So is Myles Garrett going to remain a Brown, or are they actually going to trade him? I mean, they could get a pretty big haul for Myles Garrett, that's for sure. And with the draft around the corner, they could potentially get a good draft pick. I mean, they're already the second pick in the draft as it is, but they could even bolster their chances and get even more draft picks by trading Myles Garrett. But we'll see what happens. But I definitely think that's going to be probably the biggest storyline of the NFL offseason, because he is definitely a game changer. And whatever team he ends up going to, it could be a huge deal, because if he goes to a team like that, like I just said, the Packers, that's just kind of missing out like on one key player, he's going to make them a Super Bowl contender, that's for sure. Second NFL offseason storyline I have are, we have us a lot of quarterbacks out there for potential free agency or potential trades. And then, of course, the draft as well. I mean, we've got a couple of quarterbacks in the draft, and Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, that are definitely going to be the top two quarterbacks for sure. But we've got a lot of potential things going on here. So it looks like Aaron Rodgers, he's not going to be with the Jets anymore. They announced yesterday that they're going to release him at some point. We don't know when he's going to get released. He also hasn't announced whether or not he's going to retire, but I guess it's probably going to depend on who goes after him. Now, there's a lot of teams that could use a quarterback. I mean, there's a team like the Tennessee Titans where he could potentially just walk right in and maybe change things around. Or, you know, there's a team like the Minnesota Vikings who might not re-sign Sam Darnold, and who knows, maybe they'll take Aaron Rodgers. Who knows what's going to happen with him, but it's definitely going to be a topic of conversation throughout the offseason. And, there's a lot of teams that could potentially just use his expertise. They might have, a team like, that at the top here that, the Giants, they could use a quarterback. Now, they might draft a quarterback, but let's say they draft Shedeur Sanders, but they pick up Aaron Rodgers and just have Aaron Rodgers basically teach Shedeur for a couple of seasons. That could potentially happen, but who knows? He's definitely going to have teams vying for his interest, that's for sure, if he decides to not retire, or he could decide to retire. But I kind of feel like he's probably going to play for another team. Then we also have Kirk Cousins, where it looks like the Falcons haven't said they're going to release him, but I wouldn't be shocked if they end up releasing him. Also wouldn't be shocked if they end up keeping him as well. Now, his contract is a lot of money, so I would assume they would want to rework his deal. But why would he want to do that? He doesn't owe them shit. So it could just come down to that, and then he could just end up getting released. And Kirk Cousins will definitely have people vying for his services as well. So he could definitely potentially be out there. And then, of course, Sam Darnold's going to be one of the most vied after free agents as well. There's potential that the Vikings will definitely want to throw some money at him because he had a great season for them. Or they might want to just move on, because you kind of look at it and their coach Kevin O'Connell, to me, it's kind of proven that maybe he's the quarterback whisperer, and maybe just the system he's put together is what it is. And I kind of feel like maybe they could go after a guy like an Aaron Rodgers, or hell, even Cousins has played there before too, and maybe they'll want to take a little bit less money and play there. Or they'll just, they've got J.J. McCarthy, who, you know, he didn't play this season at all because he tore his ACL in training camp. So who knows, but I kind of feel like the Vikings probably don't need to throw a lot of money at a quarterback this year, because in my personal opinion, I think it's the system, because, you know, Kirk Cousins and Sam Darnold basically had very similar seasons and were in similar offenses with the same basic weapons for the most part. So I kind of feel like the Vikings could move on and still be fine. Whereas I feel like somebody's probably going to end up overpaying for Darnold because he had such a great year last year. He's definitely going to, he definitely has upped his chances at getting a heavy contract, which he should take it, because you got to do what you got to do. But I kind of feel like Darnold had like his great year last year. He's going to sign a big contract in the offseason, and then it's just going to be a wash for the rest of his career. But who knows? But there's definitely going to be a lot of quarterbacks out there. There was even a rumor that the Pittsburgh Steelers actually contacted the Jacksonville Jaguars to see if they had any interest in trading away Trevor Lawrence. So who knows? Now, the Jaguars did shoot that down and say that wasn't legitimate. But I mean, like I said, who knows? It kind of feels like there's going to be a lot going on this offseason, and it's going to center around the quarterback position, because it's obvious you need a good quarterback to be a Super Bowl level team. And we're definitely going to have some quarterbacks available in the free agency. We're definitely going to have some quarterbacks available in the draft. And it looks like we could potentially see some quarterbacks moving around via trade as well. Then the third NFL offseason topic I have is coming from the Cincinnati Bengals, T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase has wanted a new contract over the last couple of years, and then T. Higgins himself has also wanted a contract. And these guys are obviously a huge part of the success of the Bengals offense. I mean, the Bengals offense had one of the best seasons just this past year. And, you know, Joe Burrow definitely wants both of them back. Not just Chase, but he wants both of them back. And, you know, Ja'Marr Chase, he kind of had his issues in the offseason last year. So is that going to be another lingering effect this year? And T. Higgins, he decided to play under the franchise tag last year, and they could do it again to him this year as well. But I just don't think that's what they want to do. But you just never know what's going to happen with the Bengals. So is this going to be a big deal for them throughout the offseason? Are they going to re-sign either of them? I mean, Ja'Marr Chase, I think he's got 2 years left on his contract, maybe only 1 year, but he's definitely been having issues with his contract since last season. So it's definitely going to be an issue this season. And you kind of look at the season he had last year, and he led the league in every single category. So he has the stats to even say, yo, I deserve to be paid. And then same with T. Higgins. I mean, he's a game changer for this team. And if he doesn't get paid by the Cincinnati Bengals, there's definitely going to be some teams that are going to be vying for him in free agency who are definitely going to want to pay him. And then another wide receiver for my fourth topic on the NFL offseason storylines, who's available via trade, is apparently Cooper Kupp. You know, he's been a phenomenal wide receiver for his time with the Los Angeles Rams. He even won an MVP award. He's won the Triple Crown before at the wide receiver position. He's just been a very reliable receiver for Matthew Stafford. So it's kind of shocking that they're moving on from him, but at the same time, it's really not, because his main drawback are his injuries, and he's just been getting injured over the last couple of seasons, and also his contract as well. And they probably look at Puka Nacua, who's been having a fantastic couple of seasons as well. They probably look at him and go, let's just go ahead and move on from Cooper Kupp, and let's have Nacua be the number one guy and probably work on getting some guys through the draft or free agency. So it looks like they're going to be moving on from Cooper Kupp. But whoever ends up trading for Cooper Kupp is definitely getting one of the top receivers in the league. They're getting a great playmaker. And if he ends up going to a team, like let's just say the Cowboys, for example, I would love to see him playing for the Cowboys, because I think he and CeeDee Lamb could absolutely complement each other well. Lamb could be the go-to guy in the deep. But Kupp, he's very versatile, so he's definitely going to add another level of offense for anybody who he ends up with, but it definitely looks like he is going to be traded because the Rams, it just kind of looks like that's the route that they want to go. And then my last NFL offseason storyline, of course, is the NFL draft. We have the NFL draft combine coming up next week. And then after that, it's just draft until April. So the NFL draft order is as follows for now, because obviously we could have some trades coming up here in the next couple of months or whatever. But right now, this is the official draft order, beginning with the number one overall pick is the Tennessee Titans. They have their pick of the litter, or they could potentially trade out, which kind of sounds like that's more likely what they're going to end up doing, is end up trading. But, you know, they do need quarterbacks, so they could potentially go with one of the top guys. Or they could go with Travis Hunter, because he's definitely going to be one of the most game-changing players I feel like the NFL is going to see in years. But they could also trade out as well. So we'll see what the Titans end up doing with the number one overall pick. Number two is the Cleveland Browns. Number three, the New York Giants. Number four, the New England Patriots. Number five, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Number six, the Las Vegas Raiders. Number seven, the New York Jets. Number eight, the Carolina Panthers. Number nine, the New Orleans Saints. Number 10, the Chicago Bears. Number 11, the San Francisco 49ers. Number 12, the Dallas Cowboys. Number 13, the Miami Dolphins. Number 14, the Indianapolis Colts. Number 15, the Atlanta Falcons. Number 16, the Arizona Cardinals. Number 17, the Cincinnati Bengals. Number 18, the Seattle Seahawks. Number 19, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Number 20, the Denver Broncos. 21st pick, the Pittsburgh Steelers. 22nd, the Los Angeles Chargers. 23rd, the Green Bay Packers. 24, the Minnesota Vikings. 25, the Houston Texans. 26, the Los Angeles Rams. 27, the Baltimore Ravens. 28, the Detroit Lions. 29, the Washington Commanders. 30, the Buffalo Bills. 31, the Kansas City Chiefs. And the 32nd overall pick, the Philadelphia Eagles. The top guys in the draft right now, obviously, I just said Travis Hunter. I kind of feel like he's the number one dude. Depending on what your need is, he definitely is going to be a game changer. He wants to play both the wide receiver position and the cornerback role. I kind of feel like it's just going to depend on who he gets drafted by, but I feel like you got to at least give it a shot at whatever you do with him. But he's definitely the top guy. Cam Ward, quarterback out of Miami, he's definitely one of the most highly sought-after guys. And then, of course, quarterback Shedeur Sanders out of Colorado, both of those guys. You really can't go wrong with either one of them. They both have their little differences here and there, but I think they're both definitely worth the pick. And then, of course, the top running back is out of Boise State, Ashton Jeanty. So we've got a couple of months to see what happens with the draft order. Like I said, some of these guys like Myles Garrett and Cooper Kupp, they could change things with what happens in the draft, with trades, and then also just where somebody ends up getting drafted. You just never know what's going to happen. But those, I believe, are some of the top storylines heading into the NFL offseason. And then rounding out today's show, I'm just going to go ahead and talk about five upcoming fights that we have in boxing and UFC for the year. Now, we actually don't have a lot scheduled, especially on the UFC side, which I thought was weird. But, you know, they're probably going to start announcing some more since it's basically their time of year, since ain't shit going on. But to me, the number one upcoming fight now, it doesn't have a date set yet, as a matter of fact. One half of this potential fight, he's got another fight coming up in May that we're going to talk about. But the fight I'm looking forward to most, and I think all of boxing is looking forward to most, is going to be between Canelo Alvarez and Terrence Crawford. These are two of the best boxers in boxing, hands down. They're supposed to face off in September. It has not been confirmed. No contracts have been signed. As a matter of fact, it's been a funny couple of weeks for Canelo Alvarez because, you know, it was announced that he and Terrence Crawford had a contract and they were going to fight in September, and then that fell apart, and then he was going to do one of those stupid gimmicky fights with dumbass Jake Paul, and it looked like they were going to do that, and I was going to be super disappointed because Canelo is my favorite boxer and I respect the hell out of him, but if he was going to do one of those stupid gimmicky fights, I was going to lose all respect for him. But thankfully that fell through, and so he's got a couple of fights coming up this year, but the big one is going to be between he and Terrence Crawford, because they are the two top guys in boxing, hands down. They're the best. Crawford's actually going to have to move up in weight, and that's what he's working on right now. That's why it's September is what it's set for, and not May, because Alvarez, now one of the reasons why I respect him and love him the most as a boxer is that he consistently fights like a normal boxer should. He wants to fight all year long. He always fights in May and September. Sometimes might throw in another one here and there. But for the most part, he's very consistent and always tends to fight the best boxers. That's why when it was announced he was going to fight Jake Paul, I was like, hell to the fucking no. Can you actually do a legit boxing fight? Because I don't want to see you fighting that douchebag who is not a real boxer. And yes, I know they put on great events, but I couldn't care less. That's trash-ass boxing that I don't want to fucking watch. And it's terrible. And it's a gimmick. I don't want to see that shit. But Alvarez versus Terrence Crawford, that is a legitimate fight there. And that should be happening in September. Then we have UFC 313 set for March 8th. It's going to be Alex Pereira bringing his 12-2 record versus Magomed Ankalaev. I always fuck up some of these last names, but we're just going to call him Magomed. But Pereira is 12-2. He has the light heavyweight championship right now. And Magomed is 21-1. Pereira's been that dude, though. I mean, he's had, since he has hit the UFC, this guy has had zero fucking issues. So even though Magomed is a great opponent for him, I kind of feel like Pereira's just going to keep on soaring because nobody is killing it in the UFC like Pereira is right now. Then we have UFC Fight Night 254. That's coming up on March 22nd. Leon Edwards and his 22-4 record versus Jack Della Maddalena, his 17-2 record for the welterweight title. That's going to be coming up on March 22nd. And those are pretty much the only good couple of UFC fights announced so far. Then another good boxing match we have coming up in in the summer. Oh, shit, I didn't even write down when it's coming up. But I believe it's, I believe in May, as a matter of fact. But regardless, it's coming up soon. It's going to be Gervonta Davis and his 30-0 record, 28 of those being knockouts, versus Lamont Roach and his 25-1-1 record for the lightweight match here. Gervonta Davis, he's also one of the top boxers out there with Crawford and Alvarez. He's just in a much different category than the two of them, especially Alvarez. But with that being said, I mean, he is a killer. He's a fun boxer to watch, especially with those 28 knockouts. He is something else. So Lamont Roach, he's going to be a good opponent for him to go up against. But I kind of feel like Lamont Roach better watch out for that knockout, because that's what Gervonta Davis does best. And then rounding out the top five upcoming fights this year is, of course, Canelo Alvarez versus William Skull. That's going to be Alvarez's first fight of the year, coming up on May 3rd, because, you know, he always does Cinco de Mayo weekend. But Alvarez, they're going to be fighting for the super middleweight belt. Alvarez and his 62-2 record going up against William Skull and his 23-0 record. Skull is okay, but I feel like Alvarez is going to completely handle this dude. It's more just Alvarez needed somebody to fight in May so he could get ready for this Terrence Crawford fight in September. So that's what we have coming up for fights in 2025. Obviously, we're going to have a lot more because, like I said, those couple of UFC fights, they're just mid, other than Pereira. But, I mean, I just kind of feel like Pereira is just going to do what Pereira do. All right, enjoy the quiet weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.